everybody, and welcome to, I believe our fourth? Is this our fourth?
I don't keep track anymore.
All right. God, after three, nobody can count anymore.
No, I can't.
I'm going to go ahead and say our fourth episode of Magic the Prothering.
That's awesome.
Exactly. The episodes where we bring you interviews with Magic's top players so that you can learn more, get to know more, and generally more.
So you can generally more Magic the Prothering.
I'm really killing this intro, man.
You are. And we have a very special guest joining us for
this Prothering
who is recommended to us by a number of sources.
Absolutely.
We're not just picking these willy-nilly, okay?
No. Highly recommended standard grandmaster Brad Nelson himself. Welcome, Brad.
Hi. I don't know if I can actually follow up that introduction, but I'm here.
I mean, I feel like standard grandmaster is really the title you should have. I mean, I would put it on a cape and wear it around a GP if I was you.
It's actually Tom's girlfriend, Hillary, has started calling me Master of Standard. And we have a throne, which is my part of the couch when I play Magic and all of that. So I like Master of Standard a little bit more than Grandmaster since I'm used to
it. Master of Standard, perfect.
Fair enough, yeah.
With a throne made of golden magic cards and a dragon on each side.
I wonder if someone has I would gild a magic card. You wouldn't be able to tell what it said anymore, though?
It would just be a square, it would be a rectangle
of
gold.
It would be a rectangle of gold.
Oh, boy.
Do it anyways.
Well, if anybody out there doesn't know, Brad really is a standard of master. Oh boy.
A master of standard
with top results in about a billion Grand Prix over the years.
Or nine.
Yeah.
Nine? Okay, well that's close. Nine, a billion.
It's a lot.
Potato, potato.
Like, I remember just over the course of and I'm looking at it here, like October 2014, February 2015, May 2015, you top aided three Grand Prix in those 3 months.
What?
And I just remember it was just like, oh yep.
Brad Nelson's going to be at the top again.
Top 8 at another standard GP. Seems about right.
I actually broke a 3 Grand Prix in a row streak when I had to concede to my brother into top 8 of the fourth one. Yeah.
That's so nice, though. You may have broken your top 8 streak, but you started a niceness streak.
Yeah. A brother friendship to last for the years. He really owes you now, though. Does he know that?
He does.
Okay, great. You were player of the year in 2010. Mm-hmm. You were on the Community Cup team back in the day. High
champion.
Five Community Cup, brother. Oh, yeah, champion. Good. You weren't on the 1 year
the
that
one
lost.
The 1 year that lost.
That was probably Woods' season, to be fair.
That explains everything.
That. I'll make sure if I ever see Conley Woods around, I'll be like, hey, nice job, buddy.
Just rub it in his face.
Just like that.
You won the first Star City Players Championship in 2014. Are you on a token?
I am on 2 tokens.
Oh my gosh.
Ooh, what 2 tokens are you on?
Well, I'm on the GOAT. That's the one that I won.
Perfect.
Excellent.
Yeah, the Trading Post GOAT. And then I was part of the first cycle with Jerry Chapin, Floors, and Kibler as just their promotional. We're just 1-1 humans.
Yeah, totally.
I think the GOAT was the right choice.
That's
well
a
done.
Perfect decision.
I mean, it sees high level play everywhere, and I thought that was the token that I really wanted to just be on all the tournament tables, so.
Yeah, absolutely. GOATs, you know, just taking all formats by storm.
Mm-hmm. So let's start back at the beginning, Brad. How did you get started playing Magic? Tell us the tale. Weave us the history, if you would.
Well, it started in high school on a cafeteria table like many others. A friend of mine just brought me down to their table at the end of school, and I got hooked immediately. The actual first thing I ever bought playing Magic was Carlos Romeo's World Champion Psychotog deck, because I didn't know what else to buy. I just went to
You win money from Magic, you buy more Magic stuff, right?
Yep. Yeah, but I bought that, which those are like World Champion decks. I don't know if you guys have seen those, but they're awesome. Back in the day, they used to just print off, I think, maybe the whole top 8, and they were like gold borders. They're not legal, but I went to GameStop to buy cards. I'm like, I need Magic stuff, and and that's what he sold me. So I played with that for a while, which was just way above the curve for me. But I got competitive immediately, found Magic Online within a month or two, and I was playing all of the high-level decks. And I worked for 2 years and only spent money on a car and video games that isn't really that expensive. So I dumped like $2,000 or $3,000 into Magic in the first 6 months. Don't tell my mom, but...
I tell my mom absolutely nothing about my Magic spending. She would have a heart attack. So, I mean, like, you started and you went to the top pretty quickly. Talk about how well you did so quickly in your career.
I'll give you guys the real inside scoop. It wasn't yes. as glamorous as, you know, BDM in 2009 made it out to be. I started playing in 2003, very casually for about 3 or 4 years, playing local tournaments, trying to be competitive on that series. But when you want to play something competitive from North Dakota, you have to travel 6 hours. So I was just not willing to do that because I liked Magic and it was my hobby through high school and college, but I had no idea if I was actually good. And Magic Online at the time didn't tell you if you were good or not because it was really competitive. So I went to my first regionals on a whim and just smashed it and just went to nationals and almost made top eight. And then that's when the fire really started. But that was back in like 2006, seven. And it took me like 2 years of grinding PTQs to get on the Pro Tour. But once I was there, they were really pushing Magic Online hype, and they just made me out to seem like this unbelievable phenomenon. Like, and then I just took ninth, so like they got to prove their own little like white lie. And then it was history. But it was really lucky. Like, I had Jake Van Loonen telling BDM that I'm really good at my first Pro Tour. They hyped me up because they wanted to promote Magic Online, and then I actually did well to just catapult me into every household.
So were you playing Magic Online back when there were little tables and little people seated around the tables? And that was how you drafted?
Yeah, with the 1900, or was it 1800 composite room, where you couldn't even get into it without an 1800 record.
And what?
Yeah, there used to be a room where only 1800 or more could get into it. If you ever fell below that, you'd have to go back and grind to get back in it. And they had more. That was where the 8-4s were. You couldn't 8-4, I think, unless you were in that room. And yeah, you had the little tables of drafts. You could set up your own 3v3s on Magic Online. So we were doing casual drafts. Yeah, I can say it. We were doing money drafts online. And
wow, this is the Wild West.
I know.
And clans are really important. And the big throwback to my career is OSIP Drives Me to School. It was a clan that had, I don't remember everyone in it, but like a bunch of names you might not recognize, like Niv Shmuley, names you will, like Adam Yurchik. I can't even think of anyone else on top of my head. I know their moto name still, but you could only have 20 people in your clans, which was awesome because it was just so cutthroat. Like, if you weren't, you know, doing well playing on Magic Online, you would get cut from the team. And but that it really cultivated a lot of competitive players that still play to this day. A lot of people that you know of now as professional Magic players really grew up in these clans, learning from each other. I mean, almost everyone, honestly, like Raptor, Josh Edgar Layton, he was on Dragon Quest. They were number one.
What a name!
I was in OSIP Drives Us to School. We were third.
Also a great name.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And I don't know where it came from, but like we were third, but we were the ones that were catching up the fastest. We were getting the most packs. And it was just a really fun time to play Magic Online. It was just the most competitive, and now, like, the chats work. Now you can't really chat, and your clans can be 10,000 people. Like, I think Limited Resources is the best clan online because everyone's in it. Like 30,000 people. But it doesn't even matter because there is no limit, so it's just whoever can, you know, accumulate the most bodies to be in it. So clans suck now. I wish they would go back to that, but I guess it was... it discriminated against like the more casual players, like the 1800 room. Like now they don't want that because it makes people that aren't there feel bad.
That's so crazy. Yeah. The 1800 room. So if I was to open a bar and call it the 1800 room and it was very swank and like, you know, velvet rope VIP, would you come?
I believe I would. I don't know. Actually, my Magic Online right now, I think I'm under 1,800. I'm not going
to lie. You can't come in. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. You have to bring your laptop. You have to sign in. And then open up to your rating. So it's the line takes 5 hours to get through. Yeah.
The bouncer there has a hell of a job. Yeah.
So you just mentioned briefly when you were talking about your rise to the top, the fire. What is that?
It's the drive to keep going. And back then I didn't really have a description for it, but now it's just near misses. And the best way to articulate, I guess, is a near miss defines someone. And if, you know, you miss, you lose your win in ins, you keep making top eights of PPTQs and not getting there, you keep losing the top eight of your RPTQs, those moments in someone's competitive experience will either give them the fire to keep pushing forward or make them give up on it. And because you're never just always going to win. Winning's actually easy to do once it's accomplished, right? Like, if you keep winning, magic's easy, life's easy. But when you're, like, getting those close misses and you're just one step away from what you're trying to achieve, that defines someone. And the fire is just that motivation to continue.
Nice. So you've said that in some ways winning player of the year was a curse. Like, is that kind of, does that kind of feed into what you're talking about?
Well, it was like winning player of the year was weird to me because it was like this Icarus issue that I took so many years playing in my little fishbowl of the Midwest and Magic Online, and then got catapulted to doing well at Pro Tours, doing well at Grand Prix. A lot of it, I believe, was skill, but it was a different skill than I have now, because back then I think I was just ignorant to what losing was, and I didn't actually know how to lose games of Magic. No, I mean this. Like, there's a thing about this. Like, and when you don't understand how to lose and people think you win a lot, it's just a self-fulfilling prophecy, because you take more aggressive lines. Like, if you lose a lot, you're more scared of losing, and therefore you're going to try to...
Whose fire alarm is that? Yeah, is that mine or yours?
It's Jerry Thompson's. I'm actually at his place. We're testing. And I think it's...
Jerry, get that pizza out of the oven!
And that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Called it.
He's about to eat a tombstone. where was I? Fire alarm into tombstones, into back to
not knowing how to lose.
That's it. And so I did so well then, but then I started to lose, and I started to play scared Magic. And when you play assuming you could lose or trying to play around everything, you can't actually win at Magic, because you have to take lines. Like, if you play around every card in your opponent's deck, that's foolish when they only have three cards in their hand. You have to figure out what those are and make appropriate decisions. And back in 2010, I just kind of jammed. I wasn't scared of things. I was just winning a lot. At one time, somebody was complaining about not doing well that year, and I'm like, just top eight GPs. They're so easy. Just do that. Like, I don't get why you don't just accomplish this.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I'm having such a rough year.
Megan, just top eight a GP. Come on.
Yeah, no, seriously. You're right. You're right. Okay.
And then in 2011, I felt like I was set up to fail. Like, I was just put on this pedestal for the viewer's amusement, which is fine because that's, you know, Owen's on that right now. But he, you know, it's just this huge dominance on the game. It's going to happen. But I fell so fast, and I didn't have the foundation of years to back me up, that I was just the one-hit wonder. And it was really tough to live in your own shadow when you really got built up by these same people and these same storylines. And so 2011 was really rough. I didn't even know if I was going to continue playing Magic. And I ended up going all in and moving to Roanoke, which was really big for me, because in North Dakota, I don't have any resources to get better besides Magic Online, but that's more difficult. And, like, I wasn't playing a lot of live tournaments, so my game was just in its worst place ever. I just had so many bad habits. I was scared when I was playing. I didn't really know how to change my game from playing against somebody at a PTQ or playing against Luis Scott Vargas. And you have to adjust what you're doing, because like a lot of times when you play against a lower level player and you get a gut feeling like they have a Selesnya charm, and then next turn they don't play like they would have a Selesnya charm, then you then you're like, okay, they don't, and then you get blown out by it the next turn because they just didn't play it correctly. And identifying what level everyone's on is really important to winning a high number of matches. And so that I had to relearn and all of this. And yeah, so it was a curse in the sense that I really felt abandoned by the community, I guess I'll say.
What do you think is the most important lesson that you learned from like that really fast rise and then the fall after?
Don't enjoy losing, don't enjoy winning. Like,
it's... Keep it on an even keel.
It sounds ridiculous, but it's true. You have to treat every match the same. Like read Duke the hell out of Magic. Like, read... honestly, if you just become read Duke, you'll do so much better.
Never concede. I wish that every day, Brad.
Yeah. As a verb. Read Duke the hell out of Magic. Yeah, okay.
Never give up. What it means is you never give up. Play every game until you take lethal, and never concede tournaments. Just play every match of every tournament, and just turn every match of Magic into your best quality game. And just like if you're round one of a pre-release, I guess a pre-release is different because I don't even take them seriously. I just go to have a lot of fun. But like your round one of an open should feel the same as the finals of the open. You should just have the same pressure on yourself to do well and not. And not the fear in the finals of losing something. Because in round one, you're technically not playing for any amount of money or glory or no one's watching you, but you are, if you think about it. Because that win gets you so much closer to the next win and gets you so much closer to that final. So once you're there, you shouldn't put the pressure on it because those matches also define your entire tournament. And so I learned to just treat every match the same.
Wow.
Yeah.
Deep. I mean, like, I didn't think of it in the way of, like, living in your own shadow, being built up, and then you're like, oh my god, now I have this mythic sort of person to live up to, who yeah. everybody thinks that I am, but in reality, I'm just like a human being.
A master even standard though, human being.
Yes, which, even is, though you are a master
which is,
of standard.
Which is also the same thing as the 2010 thing.
So I guess I just want to know why you love this game. You know, what got you through it to make that decision to go to Roanoke and just keep playing? What about the game drives you to keep competing?
The question has evolved over the years, actually. Like a lot, I've heard that question many times in my life, and I've always given a different answer. And I think I've finally figured it out, which is it's never bored me. Where every other aspect of life gets boring. You can get bored in school. You can get bored at a job. You can get bored in a relationship. Like, everything about life can get boring, but no one's ever bored of Magic. And if you get bored of Magic, there's four different formats. There's flashback drafts. There's always something to explore in the game, and it's always evolving and changing, and it's really complex that as long as I'm... you know, able to do the things I'm doing or even potentially evolve and go, you know, like my dream is to end up at Wizards working for them once I'm done trying to accomplish everything I have in the game. But I've never been bored with it, not once. Even in a car ride that should be boring, I can think about Magic. And so it's just a phenomenal game in the sense that I just always have something to do with it.
Yeah, I like to tell people, you know, when they ask, like, oh, that's interesting, you play Magic or whatever. Slightly judgy, I'd like to point out. And I'm just like, well, I just flat out say, honestly, I think it's the best game that's ever been made. And I'm not saying that as an opinion. I actually think it's a fact.
Like, I think it's the second best game ever made.
Ooh, what's the first one?
Muffin Knight.
Did you just say the words Muffin Knight?
I did. It is a... Wait, the camera's...
It's a Saturday for me. That's what it is.
The camera's on right now, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, are you going to hold up a picture of the game Muffin Night for us?
Can I play it right now?
Yeah.
Can you see this?
Yeah, it's a little muffin. Can you get it a little closer? Bring it in. Bring it in.
I don't know if I can play while doing it. I don't think so, but it's just an app game. So what it is you are a child... and you find a basket of muffins in the forest, and you go up to the muffins, and you touch them, and they explode all over the world. and thousands and thousands and millions of muffins. And the witch that had them just shows up, and she's like, why'd you touch my muffins? Like, I'm going to turn you into a knight, and you have to go collect all my muffins. And this is the story. Yeah, this is the story. And so it has, like, 25 different characters you can be, like Ninja Kitty. You can be a cyclops, a zombie, all these different things, and they have a different ability. And as you jump around the map, every time you hit a muffin, you switch into a different character that has a different ability, and you have to keep getting the muffins, but, like, bad guys come, and if you don't kill them in time, they become better guys, and it just, like, becomes more difficult as the game goes. I swear, it's so addicting. It's,
all right, this is amazing. I'm downloading it immediately after
this.
I'm
going to have to sue these people for stealing my life story and making it into a game.
Yeah, but, Megan, where's your royalties?
God damn it. That was literally taken straight from my childhood. I was a kid walking in the forest. I touched a basket of muffins.
Yep. And
it
now
exploded.
Now you're a knight?
I'm really just on a giant quest.
Oh, okay.
You are just two people I've met in my quest to collect all the muffins from the world.
Get it. I get it.
So tell us, we've talked about you being the standard master. But is standard your favorite format? Or if not, what is your favorite format?
I think my favorite format to play is Legacy. I don't get to do it enough. It's really fun. It feels the most balanced. I do best in standard. I guess I did best in standard for a couple years. This last season has been a little bit more rough. But I felt like the Khan's Theros standard was really easy for me. It was a lot of sideboarding, a lot of making changes every week. And all the stuff I write about, but I just don't feel like anyone listens to me. I swear, everything I do, and it's kind of, everyone, when I do it at a tournament, they're like, this is genius. And it makes no sense because, like, 2 weeks before that, I write, well, when you're in standard, it seems like you got to switch gears. So just if you're a more controlling deck, have an aggressive element in your sideboard. And if you're a more aggressive deck, have something that can sideswipe them. And then I do that 2 weeks later, and they're like, how could anyone do this? Like, why did anyone else think of this? And I do it every time. Like, look at all the decks from the past. They just have, like, this one different attack point built into it. But anyway, I like Legacy because it's complex. A lot of the decks stay around. It's difficult to get bored with that format because you're interacting so much so quickly. And Standard, in the last, like, 2 years, has gotten boring for me in the sense that it's really powerful effects. And, like, and this last one, it's all grindy. Like, we had all these Collected Company Jace decks, and I thought they were awful for Magic. But now, like, we have just powerful effects that if they're not dealt with immediately, you lose, so you have to build your decks in this balance, but there's this high variance-ness that doesn't really come with Legacy. And my least favorite is Modern, but I don't want to get into that. We don't have enough
well,
time.
It's fine. We understand.
We don't have enough time. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Do you think sideboarding is one of the number one things that makes you stand out as kind of hitting that next tier above other people in Standard?
Well, yeah. I mean, sideboarding is the most complex part of the game. All of us content producers would be out of a job if they took sideboards out of it. That's where all of the strategy comes from. And when you figure out formats, and you figure out how people build their decks, and you treat it like a job or like homework, and you look at all the decks and you see how they function and what they're siding out and what they're siding in, anyone can do it. I don't actually think I have this gift, and a lot of I don't do 100% of the work either. Like a lot of people, like Jake Van Loonen, Jerry Thompson, Tom Ross and Todd Anderson, Michael Majors, all the people, a lot of them from Verona because I work with them. A lot of them have helped some way along the line with figuring out strategies. It's just that I can broad strokes figure out the best one of all the ideas and just execute them. And I just don't think enough people even try or test enough. Have you gals ever tested before a format or tested for a tournament before the decks were locked in, like for the first open of the season or anything like that?
We've only tested for limited events.
Okay, so a lot of people, when they start testing for constructed events, just play game once. They don't play any sideboarding games. And even week to week, if they're just at their local card store, they'll just play game ones. When I think, like, you should maybe not ignore game ones and just play sideboarded games. Just play with a 30-card sideboard and just keep swapping around cards in matchups to see how they work. You gain so much more information that way. Like, people have such good 60-card decks for the first week and just garbage outside of that. Just so bad. They're like, I'll put my four life gain cards and my three destroyed artifacts and enchantment cards, and I should have a way to kill Thunderbreak Regent, and that's just what they do, and I just think it's wrong. And if you just work on sideboarding more than game ones, you'll figure out that there isn't much, amazing things going on in my head, I guess. I'm just one of the only ones that's really working on it.
Nice. So you mentioned like the four color decks and the Jace Collected Company decks. How do you feel about the upcoming standard format? Like when things rotate out, do you have any big hopes for the new standard format?
I just think it's going to work itself out. There was a lot of problems with this last format because of Fetch Duel. Fetch Duel creates this amount of time that we need to take in a match that didn't normally happen. Scrying was 10 seconds, shuffling is 30 seconds. And now we have neither of those, so putting lands into play is going to be as fast as ever. But the other problem with the format was all the decks were built in this way that, like, say Crackling Doom, what colors is that?
Mardu.
Was it a Mardu card last format?
No.
And so
it was anybody's card.
And so now that we don't just take all the premium cards and put them in the same shells of, you know, like Mardu Green and Jeskai Black were practically the same deck. They just played a couple different cards. Now we get to play with more of the cards in the format, and there will be real decks again. Instead of just how can I fit all the best cards into this shell. So we're going to see two color decks, one color decks, maybe some three color decks, but we're just going to see a higher amount of cards being played overall, which is, I think, better for Magic, and won't make certain cards cost $100 anymore. Like Jace is going to even get more expensive, and it's not, because it's not going to fit into as many decks as any like archetype decks, but as many decks that people play. Like 30 or 40% of the field at every GP is playing Jace. Now it's going to be like 20.
I have a personal question to ask you. That came out wrong, but a selfish question. Do you think that there's going to be an aggressive red-black deck in Standard?
Maybe. We've tried Black-Red Vampires, but it doesn't feel that good. No, Olivia's great. If you're okay with being aggressive and also playing Dark Dwellers, that might be the case.
Hmm.
Like Olivia Thunderbreak, Dark Dwellers. I don't know what other things, but I do believe that there will be, because Olivia is a very powerful card.
Okay. Well, there's some hope yet for
your
me.
Your hope can live on, Maria.
How about Thing in the Ice? Is that an all-star? Is that really going to happen?
It's been good. We haven't found the right home for it. I think like maybe a Prowess deck could be a good home for it. In our other shells, it has been okay. We have some spicy ones that I'm not, you know, allowed to talk about yet until the first open, but they might write about it. I don't know. I don't want to be the one to let
that's
it out.
Okay.
Of the ice,
you don't have to.
But
you don't have to. Yeah. don't free the Kraken.
Yeah.
So, like, in all of your success, what? People always ask us, they're like, when you interview pro players, please ask them, what is your number one tip to becoming a better player? And is it sideboarding or is it something else?
It's looking in the mirror and not letting your ego drive you in one way or another. I feel like I've been wanting to write about this for a while, but I feel like there's like four stages of self-reflection. and or not even self-reflection, that's the wrong word, but
still denial?
No, Megan, that's grief. No, that's okay. Grief.
I feel like my self-reflection usually starts with denial, but anyways.
God, Megan.
Sorry, keep going.
All right, it's a little dry material. I'm sorry, I apologize in advance, but it comes down to you're bad and you don't know it. You're good and you don't know it. It starts off, I'm really bad at this.
It's okay, I just got a really great idea for a new hit single, You're Bad and You Know It.
I'm just going to write this article. I don't have it on the tip of my tongue. But pretty much what happens is a person will get a small amount of success, and then they will think they're just the god among all their little puny fish in their area. And they'll get the big fish syndrome, and they'll stop listening to the people that maybe nurtured them or helped them along the way. They will lose their team thought process, because when a group of people at a card store look at playing against me at an open, they will like band together, right? Like that when they go to an open, they'll try to work together, but they're not going to do it the right way, because every week in and week out, they just play at their local game store, and that's their competition. And so they have to spread out to play in that tournament, and then they don't test properly when they have to. And so I feel that these groups, even though they play FNM and they play these IQs and PPGQs together, they still need to like stay as a unit and work together and keep cultivating their local area to become better at Magic, because that is very important for one's success. Because you can only get so good in your local area without finding better competition, more resources to become better. But if you're building them up and you're all doing the same, you can actually all get there. For example, if someone wins, everyone together works for this RPTQ, but one guy gets it. Are the other ones going to help that person go to the Pro Tour? Are they going to stay as committed when they were all as invested in each other? And we see that happen a lot with players, where they got there because of their friends, but now the friends don't want to help them as much as they need to be good at the Pro Tour. So then they fall off. They don't get to 11-5. They don't stay on the Pro Tour. So then they get back in there and they're competition again. And so it actually helps the local area to get that person to stay on the Pro Tour.
Interesting.
And so I feel like that's the most important thing anyone can do, is to actually build their local community and or just a play group, and just make sure that you're keeping everyone there, not getting too egotistical, not thinking you're better than everyone else because you top 8 in an open or X2 or 3 to Grand Prix, and just stay level-headed and just understand that the people around you are also helping and you are benefiting from them as much as they are benefiting from you.
Everybody needs to find their own Jerry Thompson who will make a nice pizza for them.
Yeah, it is really easy for me to say when I'm at his place using his computer, playing with his cards.
And he's burning a tombstone.
Yeah.
That sounds way weirder.
Especially when you don't know that's a brand of pizza. We have Innistrad happening right now.
Yeah, exactly. He could be literally burning a tombstone.
I know.
You never know. Getting more big picture, if you could change one thing about Magic, what would it be? And that could be anything, like anything from like this, like the level of like cards and development, all the way up to like community and that sort of thing.
This feels like an actual interview question they might ask people.
Yes, Megan and I are secretly from Wizards.
It was,
Our podcast has been a big build-up to this moment. Best troll ever. Oh, boy.
That's a tough question. On the tip of my tongue, it's a pretty bad answer, but I would say the discard step. I would just like to get rid of it. Like, you can just have as many cards as possible in your hand. Because let's be real. Like, if somebody Sphinxes for 14, Sphinx's Revelation 14, and has to discard next turn, is that really going to make them lose the game anymore? Not really.
No.
No.
No, it's really not.
But it feels bad when you like keep a 2-lander with a 2-drop, you don't hit your 3rd land, you have to discard, And it might not even matter. I don't know how much higher it's going to help that person when they start making land drops, but that feels bad. I hate Manaless Dredge. I hate the... it doesn't feel like a natural game when you're playing Reanimator and you're just like, all right, discard Crystal Brand, go. Like, there's these things that just don't make sense to me. So in a gameplay, I just get rid of the 7-card maximum, just let it be as many cards as you want it to be. Sometimes, like, somebody will have 10 cards in their hand and they would have lost that game if they could only have 7. But for the most part, I think that the discard step is just not worth it. I don't know why it exists. There might be a real answer, but...
I actually don't know. Now that you say that, I've never actually thought about it. I've never thought, oh, let me get rid of this discard. And because, like, if I would have won anyway, I'm like, oh, that's bad to have my entire library in my hand. But is it? Like, wouldn't I have won the game just to having that many cards minus how many I had to discard, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it gives a significant advantage to people that are drawing a ton of cards anyway. And it's just makes some, like, older cards just... or decks just a little too good, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting that it seems like it was originally developed to, like, be to prevent people from having too much of an advantage of, like, oh, we don't want you to have, you know, 16 cards in your hand and your opponent only has 4 cards in their hand, but it's like, oh, in retrospect, are bad. It actually lets you do some broken shit.
It could be on the more casual side of Magic, like, just having that many more cards makes it more difficult to make real decisions, like, but I don't even know how you get to, like, 13 cards in your casual area and not know exactly what card you want to cast or making it too complex. I don't feel like it is. Discard just feels like a bad beat, much like Lifelink used to be, where you had to explain that your opponent's dead even though they have a Lifelinker in play and they changed that whole rule around. But I would just get rid of that.
Sorry, you cut off at the end there. What did you say?
All I said is I would just get rid of that. Am I still on? Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, got
now
you.
You're back.
Okay.
Nice. Even though you said it was just off the top of your head, like, I think that's a super interesting answer because that's never something that I would have thought about.
No, me either. Good job. So. High five. Virtual high five.
Yay. All right. So now we're going to get down to the real serious and nitty gritty question.
Yeah, this one's real hard hitter.
Yeah. If you were any card in Magic, what card would you be?
Did she get you?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
That's a question? Probably.
Yes, it's a question. That is a question.
Okay, look, do you want us, we can softball you an easy one first.
All right, let's hit the easy
one. Which planeswalker are you?
Definitely Garruk.
Nice. Yeah. Going around murdering other planeswalkers, no big deal.
All right. Well, now we know who to talk to if people start going missing.
Yeah.
We'll refer them to this podcast, the investigators.
Megan, what card are you?
What card am I? Yeah. I'm Treasure Cruise.
You're Treasure Cruise?
I'm Treasure Cruise.
You know what you should put I'm that just, on? Like your Tinder profile. It's just like, I'm a Treasure Cruise.
That sounds dirty.
Yeah, it does.
Someone would take that though. If I put that on Tinder, people would immediately take that the wrong
they
way.
They take everything the wrong way. That's Tinder.
Also super
true. Am I too old? I thought Tinder was already too dirty. I just thought it was
Yeah.
No, it's true. Like, basically, you can write anything and someone will find a gross way to take it.
Before I did this podcast, I just assumed Tinder would be one of those words you just don't say. So, Treasure Cruise doesn't really change.
Okay.
Yep, that's fair enough. I'm Treasure Cruise, right? I love drawing cards. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it was a giant mistake to ever.
Megan, you're not a giant mistake! I'm calling your mom.
Oh, that's good. Until that moment, I was like, shouldn't you have at least been, you know, humanoid in some way? Like, Arcanus the Omnipotent?
I'm a concept.
Yep. Yeah. You're an old people's vacation.
Yep.
And I'm Ixava, Rakdos Blood Witch, because I love playing Rakdos, and I love attacking, and the Unleash mechanic was my all-time favorite, as well as First Strike, so can't get any better. For me.
Alright, I should have this by now.
We've vamped long enough, Megan. The glare of the spotlight is bright.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got nothing. It would just be made up. What's my favorite thing? I guess I'll say Night of the White Orchid.
All right.
Yeah, I'm honorable.
Tell us, what does Knight of the White Orchid do? I don't actually...
Well, it wins games of Magic.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's appropriate.
It's my favorite card in Standard right now, and it's a white-white 2-2.
Oh, it's a white-white. Mm.
Yeah. I have no lore background of why I want to be this card. More than I'm honorable, I'm vigilant. The card's not vigilant.
But think of it this way.
You fetch extra lands.
In your muffin game, perhaps your name is Knight of the White Orchid.
It's not.
Oh, okay, but. Well.
It's a knight. You're a knight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is the toughest question. I'm not going to lie. There's so many magic cards.
That's all right. I mean, we've had a long time to think about
this. If you think of one, just tweet it at us,
right,
and we will let the people know.
Yes.
All right.
But in the meantime, we'll let you off the hook because Garrick is a great plains. We haven't had a Garrick yet.
No, nobody said Garrick.
You're the very first Garrick we've ever had on the show. So
I'm not vindictive, but if somebody hurts me or someone around me, I will be. So that's kind of a Garrick thing.
Yeah. 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 You've got, you know, like, the muscles.
Yeah.
We'll go with muscle, yeah.
And you're a murderer, so.
Megan.
Wow.
What? Am I just... Whoa. Sorry.
Whoa.
What? That's a thing that Garrick does.
I know. So we've asked you all the hard-hitting questions. Final question. Not magic-related at all. Tell us something people don't know about you.
Well, I guess I kind of spilled the beans on the muffin night, but
Oh, that was so amazing!
It was. So
I'm
good.
Really happy muffin about night. Learning about muffin night.
I mean, like, do you have any hobbies that you do besides magic? I mean, magic takes up just a ton of time, but
A ton of time. I can't think of a real hobby I have. Besides just like. Making sure I allocate enough time to my girlfriend. I can't think of, you know, you have magic and then you have all these other responsibilities that you, you know, squeeze into a little time frame every week. But what hobbies? I like movies. I feel like I'm in an interview again.
Yes, please tell us. This is actually literally an interview, just pointing out.
Put another job interview.
What's your favorite movie?
What's your favorite movie?
It is Good Will Hunting.
Great choice.
Yeah.
That's a good
solid film. I want to watch it again.
I watch it about once a year. I just love the movie. Other favorite movies, one that you might not know about, and it is up there in my top five, is Eulogy. A lot of people have never heard of it.
No.
It's one of Zooey Deschanel's first movies. It's Everyone Loves Raymond guy, and his mom from that show. And pretty much it's Zooey Deschanel has a dad, and the dad has three siblings, and their father passes away, and they all have to go to the old farmhouse where the mom is still living. And it's the most dysfunctional family. It's a comedy, and it's just very dysfunctional throughout the whole thing. And Zooey Deschanel is the only normal person in the cast. She's like the opposite of the new girl, Zooey Deschanel, and everyone else.
Yeah, I was gonna say she's not really playing that character anymore.
And pretty much everyone else is just that Zooey Deschanel. but it's a good movie. It's entertaining. It's a good sit around with friends, have a drink, and I love that movie.
Nice.
Awesome.
I'll have to check that out.
All right, we'll check it out. It sounds good.
I love that the cast just like got more surprising the more you talked about it.
I mean, everyone else, I don't know their names. I don't think they've ever done anything since, but...
No, the guy from Everybody Loves Raymond, that's his name, and his mom. That is her name.
Yeah.
And his mom.
Oh, it's so nice to meet you. What's your name?
Oh, and his mom.
Oh, lovely. Great. I'm Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know you.
Yeah.
Everybody loves you. Anyway.
Actually, that is something that people don't know about me, is I don't know the names of anything, any magic cards, any people. The people around me, like Jerry and Todd and Tom Ross, they've all had to learn this new language, and they have to to actually get the information out of me, it comes with a bunch of context clues. And so, like, back when we were testing for the block-constructed Theros block Pro Tour in Atlanta, there was two removal spells in the format, Magma Jet and Magma Spray, I think? Yeah, Magma Spray and Magma Jet.
Yeah.
But I called Magma Jet, Magma Spray, and Magma Spray Pillar of Flame. And so there was no Magma Jet. It was just Pillar of Flame and Magma Spray. But both of them deal 2 damage to a creature. And so, for 1 mana. So every time I would say Magma Spray, which was in the format, they had to know that I was talking about Magma Jet. Which was also in the format.
Yeah. That is deep. Do you have any new names for the cards in Shadows Over Innistrad?
Inspector Gadget is is Thraven Inspector, I think.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, he's Inspector Gadget. And I don't even... What other cards? No, I don't have any goofball ones. I used to call Cavern of Soul Caravan of Souls, and my brain just wouldn't allow me to not say it. I would just always be Caravan of Souls.
It's a different thing.
Yeah, there's a cavern and then there's a caravan.
Yeah. But you know,
they each have souls.
They do.
Well, I'm definitely calling that guy Inspector Gadget now.
Yeah.
Thraben Inspector gone.
Get out of here.
Get out of here, Thraben. Inspector Gadget in.
Yep.
This might not be politically correct and probably bad, but I'll say we and I'll throw everyone else under the Caravan of Souls. The bus. But,
that's good.
The new cycle of enemy coming to play tap on common lands, we just call them the poverty lands because we don't know any of their names, and they're the common ones, or the uncommon ones. They're not the rare mana. So when we're like black, white, poverty land, because we don't know the actual name.
I mean, there's still a debate on what to call them, so maybe that'll just come through for you.
Not the shadow lands.
Oh,
you're talking about the uncommon cycle that just come into play tapped the
end.
Because the mana is so bad, a lot of decks are playing them.
Yeah,
because you only have 8 dual lands, so if you need to go further, you play those as like black white. We've been playing them, and no one knows the names of them because they're uncommon. No one cares. Can you name one of of the 5 that came out of Oath of the Gatewatch, and I will feel bad about calling them Poverty Lands.
Okay.
There's a Submerged Boneyard.
Good one.
There is,
yeah,
right?
You got one.
I might be making this up.
Yeah, one Submerged Boneyard.
Okay, I'm gonna guess one right now. The red-green one was called Trample Garden.
Trample Garden? How'd you get there?
Isn't it like Timberland Gorge?
Megan, all-star.
This is why I can't remember.
The blue-white one was called Heaven Splash.
we need to get her to WotC fast.
I know.
Put me on a Caravan of Souls. Here I go.
Oh, you guys, God, what should we name this red-blue land?
Oh, red-blue land. That's the measle water.
The measle?
Why is it a measle water?
Because measles are red.
Fair enough. All right.
On that note, Brad, I'd like to thank you for joining us on this episode of Magic the Prothering. It's been a delight to have you, and I feel like I've learned a lot both about you and your awesome career so far and about being a better player, too.
Yeah. If people listening to this want to find you...
and look into your windows at night.
In a normal, non-creepy way, where can they check out your articles and stuff like that?
I didn't hear the article thing. I was going to be like, well, this IP address isn't my house, so you can come here, but...
Sorry, Jerry. Just give us Jerry Thompson's address.
Yeah.
We'll tell people to go there.
Something in here. All right. I write all of my articles and do all my videos, the Versus series, at starcitygames.com. My videos come up Wednesday and Friday. You can find me on Twitter at FFFreakMTG. Yes. FFFreakMTG, and on Facebook, Brad Nelson, but I only post cat videos there.
Perfect.
Why aren't we following your Facebook?
We will be now.
Momentarily. Thanks, Brad.
Thank you so much.